two stories were sent at 10:30 a.m. on March 21st. Prime Minister Castro fielded a variety of questions on the possibility of an opening with the United States. The possibility exists, replied Dr. Castro. He added, lately there has been a certain lessening of tension between the United States and Cuba. In practical terms, however, there still hasn't been much progress, but we consider Dr. Kissinger's recent statements on Cuba as positive. Would you like the U.S. to recognize Cuba, Dr. Castro was asked. We are really not impatient about it. Sooner or later it will happen. When it does, we will consider it as a positive event. On the U.S. embargo, Dr. Castro said that it should be lifted before Cuba can enter into negotiations with the United States because the embargo is a coercive and unilateral policy on the part of the United States. Dr. Castro added, we don't have any embargo against the United States. If at any time they need sugar, we are ready to sell it to them. Dr. Castro was asked his opinion about reports in the American press that the CIA had mounted a number of plans for his assassination. He replied that he was aware over the years that many plans for his assassination had been organized with the backing of the CIA. But Dr. Castro added, we have been able to survive, which simply shows a certain inefficiency on the part of the CIA. The Cuban Prime Minister also answered a number of questions on Cuban-Canadian relations. He called these relations exemplary. We don't have one single complaint about Canada. Commerce is developing, and we are interested in maintaining our good relations with Canada. On an invitation to Prime Minister Trudeau to visit Cuba, Dr. Castro said that he is always welcome in our country. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. Here's the second story sent at 10:30 a.m. on March 21st. Yesterday was a busy day for Mr. Gillespie. In the morning, he met with the heads of Cuba's Central Planning Commission and the Ministry of Industrial Development. In the afternoon, he and many of the businessmen visited a secondary school outside of Havana named Canada-Cuban Friendship. Last night, Mr. Gillespie was the guest of honor at a reception in the residence of Canadian Ambassador Malcolm Bowe. During the reception, Prime Minister Fidel Castro showed up and conversed for more than 2 hours with Mr. Gillespie and the Canadian businessmen who accompany him on his visit to Cuba. Today, Mr. Gillespie is off on another round of talks with high Cuban trade and industry officials. Tomorrow, he and the businessmen will be given a little respite at Varadero Beach near Havana. On Sunday, the entire delegation will be off for Caracas, Venezuela. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. The following was sent on March 23rd. In the hours after the delegation's arrival last Wednesday, an agreement was signed for an EDC credit of $100 million to Cuba. That helped to grease the skids. And when the businessmen left Cuba, some were carrying multi-million dollar orders in their attaché cases, while others felt that they had good prospects for future sales to Cuba. What impressed the Canadian businessmen was the fact that Cuba intends to invest about $12 billion in its development plans over the next 5 years. Mr. Gillespie was able to announce that negotiations for an air agreement between Cuba and Canada will begin on May 19th. This probably means that there will be regularly scheduled flights between the two countries by the end of the year. During his visit, Mr. Gillespie spoke to Prime Minister Fidel Castro, who extended an invitation to Prime Minister Trudeau to visit Cuba. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. Following was sent on March 31st on the arrival of Marc Lalonde, the Minister of Public Health of Canada. Mr. Lalonde will have a busy week here. The Cubans are eager to show him the achievements of the revolution in the field of public health, both in the cities and in the countryside. Cuba today boasts of 255 hospitals, 314 clinics, and 8,000 doctors. 95% of births now take place in hospitals, and infant mortality is now one of the lowest in Latin America. All medical and dental care is, of course, free. Today, Mr. Lalonde will visit several hospitals, including Havana's Model Psychiatric Center. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. The following was sent on the morning of April 4th.
The top spokesman for the National Liberation Front government here, Ambassador Vo An Duan, has declared that the United States government has no right to take South Vietnamese children out of their own country. He said that the orphan airlift is a propaganda trick, an attempt to play on the humanitarian sympathies of the American people so that they will support a new U.S. intervention in Vietnam. The NLF ambassador said that the Saigon government has never shown compassion for children, that beggars roam the streets of Saigon and young girls are forced into prostitution. He said that in the liberated areas, on the other hand, the children's needs are taken care of. The NLF spokesman called on the Thieu government to resign and said that his government would negotiate with a new Saigonese regime that wanted to find the way to peace. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on April 8, 1975.
During his 4 days here, Mr. Burnham will visit schools, farms, and home construction sites and hold official conversations with Prime Minister Fidel Castro. It is possible that a joint Cuba-Guyana communique will be issued before Mr. Burnham leaves Cuba. Prime Minister Burnham's visit is another indication of growing ties between Cuba and the English-speaking nations of the Caribbean area. Next week, Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad Tobago, Guyana, and Cuba will attend a meeting in Mexico City that will take the first steps toward setting up a new multinational shipping line owned and operated jointly by Caribbean countries. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
Following was sent on April 10th, 1975.
Cuba is the only country in the Western Hemisphere that has an embassy of the Provisional Revolutionary Government of South Vietnam, sometimes called the National Liberation Front Government, sometimes simply the PRG or the NLF or the Viet Cong. The PRG ambassador here, Vo An Duan, is a man of 40 with steel-rimmed glasses who looks and talks like a scholar. Vo An Duan said here in an interview that the refugee problem in South Vietnam is being used by the Ford administration under a guise of humanitarianism to maintain U.S. presence in Vietnam and to support the Thieu regime. The overwhelming majority of the South Vietnamese people, he declared, stayed in their home areas when the Saigon troops fled, and things are now getting back to normal in those areas. The refugees who fled south, the NLF ambassador alleged, were often forced to do so at gunpoint, or for fear of heavy bombings, or because of what the ambassador called psychological warfare. He declared that the Thieu regime was going to collapse in any case, and that the best road for the United States would be to stop its talk of humanitarian evacuation and to withdraw its ships and personnel from Vietnam. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following two items were sent on April 12, 1975.
The world has become accustomed to hearing of Prime Minister Fidel Castro. A year from now, however, it might be that we will be talking about President Fidel Castro. This is because under the new Cuban constitution, whose draft version was published this week, there will be no prime minister. Instead, Cuba will have a president who will now be discussed in public meetings for 6 months before being voted on early next year, says that the president will be selected by the National Assembly of People's Power from among its ranks. Whether or not the members of this National Assembly will be elected by direct popular vote is not yet defined in the Constitution. This will be a matter for the people to discuss over the next 6 months. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. Here is a second item on the new draft constitution. It follows. Chapter 6 of the draft is a kind of bill of rights for Cuban citizens. Police brutality is specifically outlawed and, quote, no violence or coercion will be used to force a person to make statements. Article 62 says that all citizens have the right to send complaints or petitions to the authorities and to receive adequate replies. The right of religious freedom is guaranteed as long as it is not used to oppose Cuban law. Under the proposed Constitution, men and women have the right to full-time jobs, free medical and dental care, inexpensive housing, and education for themselves and their children. Prime Minister Fidel Castro told reporters a few days ago here in Havana that there are still hardship cases within Cuban society, and that his government has every intention of finding solutions for them, possibly through special subsidies. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on the morning of April 22nd.
It is the third time in less than a month that Mr. Kissinger has postponed his trip to Latin America. There is a body of thought here which believes that the U.S. Secretary of State is very happy to have another excuse for not visiting the region. A visit at this time, they say, would only point up the fact that U.S. foreign policy not only faces critical situations in Asia and the Middle East, but also right here in Latin America. Mr. Kissinger's policy of new dialogue with Latin America has been stuck in a mire of recrimination over the new U.S. trade law, which Latin Americans say discriminates against them. Last month, a meeting between Mr. Kissinger and Latin American foreign ministers scheduled for Buenos Aires had to be postponed. Many believe here that the longer Mr. Kissinger postpones direct confrontation with the crisis of U.S. policy in Latin America, the more difficult it will be for him to renew his new dialogue policy. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on April 24, 1975.
President Kaunda told reporters here that a guerrilla army is already in action in South Rhodesia and that it would step up its activities if the South Rhodesian government does not recognize the demands of the overwhelming black majority. Mr. Kaunda arrived in Cuba from Washington last Monday and spent 3 days touring the country with Prime Minister Fidel Castro. He left for the Bahamas today. Then it will be Barbados, Guyana, and finally Jamaica, where the African leader will attend the British Commonwealth Conference, which begins on April 29th. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on April 26, 1975.
Fidel Castro's view is that Kennedy's assassination was a conspiracy organized in the United States by reactionaries with possible connections to the CIA. The reason? That after the October crisis in 1962, President Kennedy began to reconsider his policy of hostility towards Cuba, and even asked the French journalist Jean Daniel to sound out Prime Minister Castro's thoughts on détente between the two nations. For Fidel Castro, Lee Harvey Oswald was an agent provocateur who worked with right-wing forces to make it appear that Cuba was involved in John Kennedy's assassination. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on April 30th, 1975. This morning I stood at a bus stop along with some 20 people here in Havana. Two of the people had this morning's newspaper with its huge headlines which read, "Definitive Victory for the Cause of the Vietnamese People." Everyone at the bus stop was discussing the fall of Saigon with unconcealed happiness. For the Cuban people, the fall of Saigon represents a kind of personal victory. From the very beginning of the war, government policy and public opinion have unconditionally supported the South Vietnamese National Liberation Front. After the Paris Peace Accords, Cuba immediately dispatched volunteer construction battalions, medical teams, and agricultural technicians to North Vietnam. It would not surprise anyone here in Cuba if Fidel Castro insists on doing the same for South Vietnam at tomorrow's massive May Day rally. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. It was sent on May 1st, 1975. North Vietnamese ambassador in Cuba, Ha Van Lau, charged that the United States' presence in South Vietnam for more than a decade has left the country with profound social scars. When the Americans flew off in their helicopters, he told me, they left behind a legacy of corruption. He spoke angrily about the tens of thousands of Vietnamese girls who had been turned into prostitutes, about the widespread drug addiction, about the large number of delinquents, about the hundreds of thousands of young Vietnamese who have not had the opportunity to go to school. The ambassador said that the job of re-educating these Vietnamese will be immense. In some ways, he said, war is less complex than re-education. In war, you fire your gun at the enemy. To re-educate requires working with people patiently and changing their thinking. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. Was sent on May 2nd, 1975.
Senator McGovern will be the third U.S. senator to visit Cuba. Last summer, Senators Javits and Pell visited Cuba, were shown factories, farms, and schools, and met with Prime Minister Fidel Castro. It is likely that Senator McGovern will also tour the country and have a chance during his four-day stay here to converse with Mr. Castro and other top Cuban government leaders. The Cubans do not see any one-to-one relation in the visit of Senator McGovern and the change in U.S. government policy towards Cuba. Recently, Prime Minister Fidel Castro, in an interview with Canadian reporters, differentiated between visits to Cuba by interested congressmen and official policy as determined by the U.S. State Department. In any case, he said at that time, Cuba considers these visits to be positive in that they contribute to a betterment of relations between the two countries. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on May 2, 1975.
Granma, Cuba's official Communist Party newspaper, has given big play to the purchase of the 20 locomotives from the Canadian firm. Last year, MLW Industries sold Cuba 30 locomotives, but only after solving a number of well-publicized problems. MLW Industries at that time was known as MLW Worthington Limited, and it was a fully owned subsidiary of a U.S. company. Last year's sales of locomotives to Cuba was only carried out after the U.S. citizens on the MLW Worthington Board of Directors were replaced by Canadians. Now, the Worthington has been dropped from its name, and the Canadian MLW Industries had absolutely no problem in making the large sale to Cuba. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on the morning of May 5th, 1975.
When Senator McGovern arrives, he will be met at the airport by at least 25 American newspersons from U.S. television, radio, and newspapers. These newspersons will themselves only have arrived shortly before the senator. Although only 90 miles separates Cuba and the United States, there have not been any regular U.S. newsmen in Havana for many years. The only big Western news media normally represented here by correspondents are Reuters, the Spanish news agency, Agence France-Presse, and CBC Radio News. It is no secret that the major U.S. news agencies, some large circulation newspapers like the New York Times, and the radio networks have been interested in having correspondents in Cuba. But it is no secret either that the U.S. State Department frowns on such Havana coverage, and also that the Cuban government will not at this moment accredit permanent correspondents here in Havana for the big American news media. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent at 10:30 p.m. on May 5th, 1975.
I asked Senator McGovern why he introduced the bill to encourage Vietnamese refugees to return to Vietnam. He answered,
most of them would be better off in their own country.
Do you think that they want to return?
I don't know. I think that they should not be forced to return, but I would like to see us conduct a referendum, and those that wish to go back, we should make it possible for them to do it. I think a great many of them left out of just sheer panic. They thought there was going to be some kind of a bloody battle for Saigon that never materialized.
That was Senator George McGovern shortly after his arrival in Cuba. And this is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on the morning of May 6, 1975.
Since his arrival here in Cuba, Senator George McGovern has made it clear several times that he is in favor of the normalization of U.S.-Cuban relations. I asked him whether his visit to Cuba was related in any way to the fact that the Organization of American States begins meeting in Washington on Thursday. Senator McGovern answered,
although I came simply as a member of the Senate, and I don't have any authority to represent the executive branch of the government, But I am very much interested in that conference that begins later on this week, and I'm hopeful they'll recommend a change in the economic boycott towards Cuba.
Will you recommend that position to Mr. Kissinger when you go back?
Well, I did it before I left.
That was Senator George McGovern, and this is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
It was sent on May 6, 1975 at 10:30 p.m.
Senator McGovern has a busy schedule ahead of him today. In the morning, he will visit a big new housing project near Havana and a steel plant. Then, after lunch, he will be taken to a cattle breeding farm where Canadian Holsteins are being used. At 6, McGovern, his advisors, and the 40 American newspersons will go to Matanzas province, where a pilot project for Cuba in elective government is underway. Some reporters are speculating that Senator McGovern will be joined by Prime Minister Fidel Castro sometime this afternoon. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on May 8th at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Prime Minister Castro said that Cuba was interested in normalizing its relations with the United States. He said that Cuba had made a gesture in this direction by signing an anti-hijacking agreement with the United States. Now, he said, it is up to the United States to reciprocate with a significant gesture. Dr. Castro said that Cuba would like the United States to drop its policy of embargo against his country before discussing other outstanding problems related to normalization. However, the Cuban Prime Minister said, his government would look very favorably on a move by the United States to lift the embargo on exports of medicine and food to Cuba. That is, what amounts to a partial lifting of the embargo. When the news conference ended, Dr. Castro and Senator McGovern held a private discussion for several hours. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
Senator McGovern seems truly pleased about his four-day stay here in Cuba and his long conversation with Prime Minister Fidel Castro. Asked about the main topic of his post-midnight conversation with Dr. Castro, Senator McGovern said,
"First of all, it's clear that the dominant issue is the embargo. He sees that as a unilaterally imposed action by the United States. He says that other issues outstanding are going to be very difficult even to discuss meaningfully until the embargo is lifted. He stressed that the United States imposed it. They have to be the body that removes it. He expects that this is going to be done sooner or later. He doesn't know what the timetable is, but it's clear that he expects that the embargo is going to be lifted, and he sees that as a move that's clearly in the interest of both the United States and Cuba."
That was Senator George McGovern speaking in Havana this morning. Last night, at a press conference, Dr. Castro told reporters that he would welcome a move by the United States to lift the embargo on food and medicines as a first step gesture towards any normalization of relations between the two countries. This is seen here as a conciliatory position, since in the past the Cubans have indicated that they wanted a total lifting of the embargo before conversations could begin. The Cuban Prime Minister told reporters that Cuba had solved the United States hijacking problem by signing an anti-hijacking agreement with the United States government. Dr. Castro claimed, however, that the United States had never reciprocated this gesture by the Cuban government, and that now it is up to Dr. Kissinger to make a significant gesture, like lifting the ban on the shipment of medicines and food to Cuba, before other outstanding problems between the two nations can be discussed. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
May 9, 1975.
Senator McGovern and Dr. Fidel Castro first met on a cattle ranch last Wednesday afternoon near Havana. As they stood dangerously close to the rear end of a Canadian Holstein, they sounded like two farmers talking about feed, milk production, rain, and dry spells. Later, Senator McGovern spoke to us about what Fidel Castro had to say about the problem of the world food shortage.
He's very clear on what he thinks the priorities of the developing world are. Number one, fertilizer. Repeated that about four or five times. We have to construct fertilizer plants all over the developing world if we're going to end hunger. Number two, irrigation, and number three, improved seeds. And he sees that trio as absolutely essential to any hopes we have to heading off massive world hunger and instability in the developing world. And he believes the United States could better lead an effort of that kind than any other country in the world. This happens to be a conviction we deeply share.
That was Senator George McGovern just before he left Cuba. And this is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
The following was sent on May 9th, 1975. Prime Minister Fidel Castro reads English perfectly, but doesn't feel he speaks it very well, so never does. Last Wednesday, however, when Senator George McGovern was here in Cuba, Dr. Castro attempted a short speech in English when he was asked about what wishes he would like to convey to the American people. He said in English, "Deeper understanding, we wish friendship. I understand it is not easy. We belong to two different worlds, but we are neighbors." He had to ask how to say neighbors in English, and in one way or another, we ought to live in peace. Here is Dr. Castro himself speaking those words.
Just understanding. The wish of friendship. I understand it is not easy, because we belong to two different worlds. But we are... Vecino, ¿cómo se dice?
Neighbors.
We are neighbors. And in one way or another, we ought to be to live in peace. United States and Cuba.
That was Prime Minister Fidel Castro, and this is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News. The following was sent on May 22nd to from the capitals. For one like myself, who's been covering Cuban events from Havana for a long time, the outstanding phenomenon of recent years is the way in which the Cubans have broken out of their isolation in the hemisphere. 6 years ago, the only countries in the Western Hemisphere who maintained normal relations with Cuba were Mexico and Canada. They have now been joined by Argentina, Peru, Colombia, Venezuela, Panama, and the English-speaking countries of the Caribbean area, Jamaica, Guyana, Trinidad, Tobago, and the Barbados. These countries have been defying a ban placed on trade and diplomatic relations with Cuba over a decade ago by the Organization of American States. Now it seems the OAS will finally take cognizance of reality in July at its meeting in Costa Rica and eliminate the resolution that attempted to make Cuba the pariah of the hemisphere. It is a change that should have been made a long time ago. By resisting reality, that is, full recognition of Cuba, for lo, these many years, the Organization of American States did great damage to itself, so serious, in fact, that it may never fully recover. Not long ago, a senior Mexican official told me that the OAS was a cadaver that ought to be buried. Although not officially stated by most Latin American countries, this is a point of view that has gained prominence south of the border. The Organization of American States was born in the Cold War era following the Second World War. It was, without doubt, dominated from its inception by the United States, and for many years its main preoccupation seemed to be with preventing radical social and economic changes in the Western Hemisphere. The OAS has never been above recognizing as members indefensibly corrupt governments and bloody military dictatorships in Latin America. The Cubans have never forgotten that Fulgencio Batista's dictatorial regime in Cuba between 1952 and 1959 was a member in good standing of the Organization of American States. Canada, by the way, never joined the OAS. If the OAS lifts the embargo on Cuba in July, will Cuba then rejoin the organization? I've heard Fidel Castro say time and time again that Cuba will never join the Organization of American States. Dr. Castro believes that the OAS was born with an original sin, that of being an instrument of U.S. Cold War policy. He is a longtime believer in the need for a Latin American regional organization without the presence of the United States.
In July, just as the OAS lifts the Cuban embargo, a new regional organization of the kind Dr. Castro desires will be established. It is called the Latin American Economic System, and its initiators are Venezuela and Mexico. Cuba has been invited to join the new organization, and Dr. Castro has publicly declared that Cuba will be very happy to do so. The organizers of the Latin American Economic System deny that their new regional economic grouping is meant to substitute the OAS, but it is clear that it will undercut the OAS and further weaken it. From the Cuban point of view, there is a good dose of historical irony in all this. As a university student back in 1947, Fidel Castro took part in a Latin American Student Congress in Bogota, Colombia, that coincided with the meeting of the 9th Pan-American Conference in the same city. That was the conference that established the Organization of American States. Young Castro was one of those at the Student Congress who vigorously opposed U.S. policy in the hemisphere. 28 years have passed, and it is hard to see how Dr. Castro could fail to extract some satisfaction from the serious crisis that faces the OAS. This is Lionel Martin in Havana for CBC Radio News.
Turn over cassette.
Revolution Square, and if this happens, it is certain that Prime Minister Fidel Castro will also speak. It is also believed that conversations will be held between Cuban leaders and the delegation from the Palestinian Liberation Organization.